Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for being here today here on K-12 Education Talk Radio. And the reason I'm laughing is just as the show started, I'm getting these bizarro, even though I never even use it anymore, Skype messages. And for the first one, they come in about every 10 minutes, okay? And one of them just came in and went, boip, as the show started. That was the boip you heard, okay? Hey, welcome to today's show on K-12 Education Talk Radio. My name is Larry Jacobs, and this will be a fun show because I've been planning this show since January 10th, all right? Our guest today is Cindy Lawrence, who's the Executive Director and CEO, okay, at MoMath, the Museum of Mathematics in New York, and they have great programs that anybody can tap into from all over the country. We kept having scheduling challenges, okay? So from January 10th, it's now March 6th, and here we are. We're going to have Cindy on today. We're going to talk about all the wonderful things that Museum of Mathematics, there's that boip again, and I can't shut it off. I can't figure out how to do it. There may be a few more boips as we go. All right, we're going to figure out how to get you guys involved with the Museum of Mathematics and get your students involved as well. And please pardon any future boips, but if anybody has any ideas how to shut them off, you can write me at edutalklarry@gmail.com. It started yesterday. I don't know why it's happening, but there we go. Welcome to technology. All right, I don't answer, by the way. They just come in as these crazy things. Hey, check out what we do at our American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Everything's free over there. You'll enjoy what we do. And it's all about equity, and that's what we're going to be talking about today with Cindy Lawrence. All right. Cindy, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks for your patience.
Okay. Thank you for your patience. We finally got it together. Call me Larry, and it's going to be a really, really fun conversation today. And back when we first were going to do this, back on January 10th, right around there, I saw a article in the New York Times about the puzzle piece. It was odd because we were going to do the show back then about mathematics. Do you know about this puzzle piece called Einstein? If you heard that?
I do. It's not exactly a puzzle piece. It is tile. Yes. So when you tile space, for example, if you were tiling your kitchen floor, we could all imagine using square tiles, and those tiles go on forever and ever. As big as your floor is, you could just keep putting those squares down. And if you chose a couple of squares, and let's say you painted them blue, you could imagine picking them up and putting them down anywhere else on the floor, and they would fit right on top of the tiling because the tiling is the same. No matter where you go, you find the same tiling.
Right.
So for a long time, mathematicians wondered if there could be a tiling that could go on forever. You could still tile your infinite floor, but somehow it wouldn't ever exactly repeat. So there would be pieces where if you picked them up, you could never put them back down on top of the tiling. There would not be another space where they fit. And very famously, a number of years ago, Sir Roger Penrose, who later went on to get a Nobel Prize, discovered that he could create what's called an aperiodic tiling, one that goes on forever but never repeats, using two tiles of two different shapes. They're rhombuses. They're sort of like squares or rectangles turned on edge. And if you use those two tiles and you put them together, you can fill your floor forever, but the pattern will never exactly repeat. Wow. And then mathematicians began to wonder, is there one single tile that could do that, just one tile as opposed to two different shapes? And most mathematicians would have guessed, no, that would not be possible. But a math hobbyist, not even a mathematician, but a guy who just likes to fiddle around with shapes in the UK by the name of Dave Smith, was playing around one day and came upon a shape that he thought might be an Einstein. Einstein meaning one tile in German. He got in touch with Craig Kaplan.
Who's
a computer scientist who loves tilings and studies tilings at Waterloo University in Canada. And Craig thought, wow, could this really be? Nah, couldn't be, but what if it is? They pulled in another mathematician who studies tilings by the name of Chaim Goodman Strauss, who happens to work for MoMath. And they pulled in a fourth person, a technologist in the UK who's a whiz with software, because in order to prove that they had what they thought they had, it actually took some pretty complicated computer programming to play this all out. And in the end, they discovered that, in fact, Dave Smith, the hobbyist, had discovered the elusive Einstein tile. So that's what you heard about. That's what you read about in the New York Times.
Boy, did I ever ask the right question. Thank you, Cindy Lawrence.
You sure did.
Wow. I wasn't expecting that great an answer, and thank you so much for that incredible detail. Okay? It fascinated me. And when I read the New York Times article, okay, you know, it had like an animation of the tile being used. It looked like a puzzle piece, the way they projected.
Yes.
Okay? I guess in a way it is the same thing. Yeah. Wow.
The animation you saw is that actually after they discovered this tile, they did a little more work, and they discovered there's actually a family of shapes. So you can morph the edges around a little bit, and there's sort of an infinite range, a continuum, if you will, of ways to just adjust the edges slightly. And this whole family of tiles are Einsteins, and this was an even more incredible discovery.
Wow.
And what's so great about this discovery is that I could explain it the way I just did to you. You don't need a math degree to understand what I said.
Exactly.
Understanding the proof is another story. That we won't go into. You really do need to be an advanced mathematician to understand the proof and how that works. But just understanding that this is a tile that goes on forever, but the tiling cannot ever exactly repeat, is something we can all understand, we can all play with. If you have pieces that you cut out, which we've done now, we have in our museum, people can play with them and see how they can put them together.
Wow.
But it's just a great story about how people discover new mathematics all the time, and it's not just mathematicians who think about this and who can make amazing discoveries.
It's just amazing. Again, thank you for that incredible explanation of it all. Let me, this is an important question, okay? And I loved what you just said, and I loved reading about Einstein. It's fascinating, okay? Why is it important, okay? And this is one of the things that MoMath, the Museum of Mathematics, really but wants people to understand. Math exists, and it doesn't just exist to drive people crazy in algebra class in ninth grade. It exists for a reason, okay? And that's really what you folks are trying to show, is that every kid can be engaged in math and how it impacts our lives every day, and it really does. And I was never very good at math because nobody really explained it to me, okay, in a context I could understand. I know many people can. So, I always had trouble with it. But my point is, why do we want to – I'm going to ask it simply, but you know where I'm going. What's the point of understanding this? Why is it important for people to understand mathematics exists? And I know, believe me, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, but I want you to answer that question because this is why people need
actually,
to know what you do. Yeah.
I have two answers to your question. One answer is that sometimes when we learn something new or study some math, it later has an application that we didn't expect. So those Penrose tilings and some of the work around tilings ends up being related to something called quasicrystals and actually the structure of certain crystals and the structure of matter. That's not why mathematicians were interested or studied this. They just found it interesting. But very often something that is found to be interesting ends up having a later application. That has been true for many years in many fields, but certainly with math and physics and biology and chemistry, there's a lot of math that ends up having applications in those other fields, even if that's not why it was explored in the first place. My second answer to that question, though, is really more about aesthetics. Math is a very aesthetic pursuit. We don't think about it that way, and we should, and that's what the museum tries to do. So, for example, you may not be someone who's an excellent painter or someone who can draw. And maybe you took art classes when you were in secondary school and you weren't the kid who was really good at it. That doesn't mean you don't enjoy going to an art museum and seeing something incredibly beautiful that someone really talented created. We all go to art museums. We go to sculpture gardens. We enjoy beauty. And so another reason why people should not shy away from math is that there's this inherent beauty to it, and we don't often teach that in school. In school, we focus on the mechanics. Yeah. We focus on how do you hold your paintbrush? How do you mix your paints? But not everybody is going to become an artist. Not everybody's going to become a mathematician, but I would posit that everybody, if shown the beauty of math, can have an experience that's wonderful, that they will enjoy. And that's what MoMath is all about. Some percentage of people will get so excited by what they see that they will want to go into mathematics, and that's great. But for the vast majority of people who come in, people like you who didn't have a very favorable relationship in the past with mathematics, we want you to come in and see something beautiful. And there is not a day that goes by that I don't walk through the museum that I don't hear three words from somebody in the museum who's visiting. And those three words are, "That's so cool."
Yeah, I was just going to say, that is amazing. That's exactly the three words I was thinking of. This is cool. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
And you don't necessarily have time to see the cool bits in school. That's why there are museums to share this kind of thing with you. And that's why we exist, to show people like you, like students in school who maybe aren't having a great experience with math, that there's much more to math than memorizing a formula and getting the right answer. I'm not suggesting the basics are not important. They are. But there's more to it, and we need to be showing kids the beautiful things about math. It's kind of like music.
Yeah, I would
as well.
Agree.
If you hear a beautiful symphony, you may be motivated to go learn the mechanics of playing an instrument, which takes a lot of hard work and practice.
That's a great analogy.
We want to be the symphony of mathematics.
That's a great analogy, by the way, I have to tell you. So let me ask you that, and this is the important question. We're talking to teachers all over the country, elementary teachers, math teachers in secondary school, plus some other teachers, okay, social studies teachers, maybe science teachers, et cetera, et cetera. That's who we're talking to today, all right? What do you guys do at the Museum of Mathematics? How do these teachers tap in? What's coming out of the museum? That teacher, I'm going to say, in Kansas, or where I live in Maine, okay? I'm not near New York. You're in New York. But people can tap into the museum, and they can make I'm going to say they're going to make the silo disappear, okay? Because math is the word mathematics, if you call it the Museum of Mathematics Art, okay, that's different. But if you call it the Museum of Mathematics, oh, my God, math, why would I go see that? I hated algebra. Okay, talk about what the museum offers to teachers to help engage kids, and that is so darn important these days.
So the museum offers field trips, first and foremost, and that's not just schools in New York City or in the tri-state area that come, but we have schools that come not only from all over the country but from all over the world. New York City happens to be a destination for field trips. A school that's coming to see a Broadway show or see a history museum or do something else in New York City very often will fit in a trip to MoMath. But for schools that are not coming to New York City, we also have programs for them. We do online field trips where we will have one of our educators engage with a class anywhere in the country for a 45-minute session, very similar to what we do in the museum. We run programs on the evenings, on the weekends, all around the clock, and we have those programs available online. For example, last night we ran a program where we featured six early career young women in mathematics talking about their experiences and how women do belong in math, which is not something that all young girls will see and perceive. And we had a sixth grade class from Alaska joining us last night. And what a wonderful thing that was. Here are six role models who are just starting out on their mathematical journey, who have an interest in outreach, and they're connecting with a classroom of young people in Alaska. That's the kind of thing that we provide. We welcome teachers to bring their classes, either sign up for a dedicated trip online, just their class and us, or come to one of our many, many programs. A number of them are offered for free. We are always happy to have people from around the world joining us. We are in more than 120 countries now with the people who participate in our online programs.
And that's great. And I hope you're in all 50 states, which I guarantee I can.
Yes,
I can
of course
say
we are.
You are. You know, and I just wanted to make that point. And you brought up another point just now. And that is, I seem to remember, and by the way, it's been a long time since I've been at school, but I seem to remember that the girls where I went to school at least seemed to be better in math than the guys. Now, I'm not sure of that, not how it worked out over the long run, but I'm trying just to paste back what I remember here. Okay, I always thought girls were pretty good, young ladies, if I may, at math. Okay, and that great movie Hidden Figures kind of pointed that out, the innate nature of mathematics to women. And I'm curious, why are we having trouble finding young ladies to go into STEM? And of those six young ladies, all right, what were their careers? What were they? Were they going to become mathematicians? And what does that actually mean if you're a mathematician? I mean, that's a good question.
So,
but go ahead. Cindy, that's about 12 million questions. Go ahead. Yeah.
It's a great question. So first of all, I would say that whether young ladies or young men are better or worse at math is a question that I don't think has an answer. I think everyone's an individual, and I think it's cultural. And in this country, we definitely have fewer women going into mathematics at the advanced level, but it's the opposite in some Eastern European countries, where women are perceived, as you just mentioned, as being stronger in mathematics. So I believe that it's cultural. I believe there is a problem with stereotypes, but the fact that those stereotypes are different in different countries says to me that there's no inherent biological strength that is bestowed upon women or men in mathematics. The problem we have is that in the advanced world of mathematics, there are far fewer women than men. And what this does is this is a self-perpetuating cycle, because young women who are interested in math see math teachers, mathematicians, math educators who are primarily men, and they get the sense, even if in a subconscious way, that math is not a field that welcomes women. And we're trying to change that, which is why we ran that program last night. We actually had a fellowship over the summer. We brought 10 early career young women in mathematics fields, and we taught them and helped them learn how to do outreach so they could share their math with a general audience, and they've agreed to go back in their hometowns for the coming year, all through 2024, and deliver talks to young people. So more young women will see that women indeed do go into math. Now, you asked the second question, which was, what does a mathematician do, or what do these women do?
Yeah.
The answers were really varied. One of the women uses math to study agriculture, crops, animals, all kinds of interesting things in Arlington, Texas. And so that's a very unusual use for mathematics that probably somebody going into math wouldn't necessarily think about. Somebody else is working in artificial intelligence. Somebody else is working in something called quantum computing and trying to figure out what the smallest pieces of matter look like. So one of the themes that was really prevalent throughout the conversation was these six young women saying one of the reasons they went into mathematics is because math is so broad and so diverse that whatever field you might have an interest in, there's probably a connection you can make with mathematics. And indeed, there was a young woman who is in college right now, undergraduate, who was in our audience and asked that question at the end of the program. She said, I'm majoring in math because I like math, but I don't know what to do with it, and I don't know which area to specialize in. And the response from our panelists was, think about things you like. Do you love music? Do you love art? What do you love? Yeah. There's probably a world where what you love and math intersect, and you need to find that world and find the people in that world, and then you'll have your home.
And, you know, Cindy, I got to tell you, my son used to live in New Orleans, and we used to go down there for Mardi Gras. And you would see the high school bands, and the kids were obviously so proud, and the bands were so good at, you know, march or whatever parades you were looking at for Mardi Gras. But if you looked at the scores in mathematics, okay, for these were high school bands, but if you looked at the scores for mathematics across the board in New Orleans, they weren't good, okay? And to me, I'm just trying to jump on what you said a minute ago, music is mathematics. That's the basis of it. Okay?
Absolutely.
Or a three-quarter note.
Absolutely.
Okay? But somehow that connection wasn't being made in New Orleans schools. Here they had kids that subconsciously loved math, if I may. Okay? But when they worked at it in schools, they weren't doing as well. They went to music instantaneously. It's just they lost the connection. And this is the thing that always worried me about. It happened to me. I mean, I'm not dope. But I was terrible in math class. And by the way, all of my math teachers who made me think about it were all men from sixth grade through 12th grade. They were all men.
I will say there's a way to reach anybody with mathematics. Teachers don't always have the time to individualize for every different student. I wish they did. This is a function of schools and budgets and time and tests. But if you can't learn something the way your teacher is presenting it, there's probably a more interesting way, a more visual way, a more auditory way. And with the internet now, all of these different things are available. So there are a lot of people doing math outreach online. There's a lot of YouTubers, a lot of people that have blogs, a lot of people with really interesting things. And my hope is that students who maybe don't love math in the classroom will somehow see something at MoMath that'll spark them to go look more on the internet and get really interested in something. You know, the Rubik's Cube is a highly mathematical toy.
Classic example.
And there are many people that get interested in the Rubik's Cube and then go on to major in mathematics because of what they played with this toy. So whatever the way in is, whether it's music, whether it's art, whether it's something like a game or a puzzle, like a Rubik's Cube, there's always a way in, and we just want to help people find that door, that open door into mathematics.
And you know, I have to ask this question, which is an odd question, and I think in reality, if I may, and of course things have changed since I was in school, etc., but I would hope that mathematics teacher training has changed, and you offer a way into that. You offer a path in, and I'm wondering if you are working with any of the colleges that are teaching math, future math teachers, and showing them a different way to get these kids engaged. Has anybody approached you with that? I hope they would, but I'm not sure they have.
We do partner with educators at all levels, including at the college level. But I'm not so sure I agree with you that math teaching the way it's been done is not good. I do think there are the basics, and you have to learn the basics, and learning the basics isn't so much fun. We compared earlier to music, and I'll make that same comparison again. If you want to learn how to play the violin because you've heard a beautiful violin solo, and you go out and you get a violin and you take some lessons, the first part of what you're learning to do is how to hold your instrument, how to hold your bow, how to read music. You have to memorize what that notation means. Nobody's born knowing that. Somebody has to show it to you, and you literally have to do some work to memorize and practice, and you play your scales up and down and up and down. None of that is particularly fun. None of that is particularly beautiful music that you're making. In fact, it's probably the opposite in the beginning. But you go through it because you've heard a beautiful violin solo, and you want to get to the point of being able to make that music yourself. So I don't think necessarily that what we're doing in our classrooms is bad or wrong. It's just that we need another piece. We need something to spark interest and curiosity and enthusiasm in kids. They still need to learn the basics. It's still not necessarily going to be fun to memorize your addition facts or your multiplication tables. You got to do it. Because once you do that, you unlock the key to so many more wonderful things, to those symphonies of mathematics that we want to share with the world.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you, because I think what you're doing at the museum is right. Okay? One of the challenges is when I was in school anyway, you learned the basics, but there was no goal beyond just learning the math for the sake of the math. Okay? They weren't putting it into a context, okay, that I could understand its usefulness. When you learn the basics of a violin, your goal is to play the violin and perhaps compose music or play music. But my teachers, this is back in the early 1000s, Charlemagne was king when I was in school, okay, the Charles the Great, Charles the Magnificent, all right, the point is that they weren't giving me a reason to learn it. They weren't putting it into the context of a goal, something beautiful that can come out of this. It was just, I either got it or I didn't. And I'm just laughing here as you were saying some things before. You know, my math teacher thought I was an idiot, and my history teacher, I wound up being a history teacher, okay, my history teacher thought I was a genius, okay? But the fact of the matter is there's a lot of combination between the two, okay? And my point is math is important, and math is logic, all right? That's why in the old days, in order, if you could become an FBI agent, if you were an accountant, because you understood math, you understood logic, okay?
Right.
And an attorney, being an attorney, it's logic. I take the clues, okay, and I move them towards a logical end, All right. And that's what was missing. And that's what the gap is that you fill at MoMath. Okay.
I certainly hope we're filling those gaps.
You do.
Yes.
You do. People walk through there, oh, math. And then suddenly this kid sees something gorgeous in there. Oh, wait a minute. What's this got to do with mathematics? Holy moly. I mean, it's that.
And I think you bring up a really good point.
I'm on your side,
point.
By the way, Cindy. I'm on your side.
Yeah. I'm glad you are.
Yeah.
I think you just brought up a really good point, though, that I'd like to underscore. And that is, if you practice math and you become good at math, what you're really becoming good at is thinking logically and problem solving. And those
Bingo.
Are skills that will carry you through your life, regardless of whether you ever do another math problem or not. So that's why you mentioned lawyers that have to think logically. Do you know the candidates taking the LSAT, the law school admission test? The highest grades are from math majors on the LSAT because they've learned to think logically.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's an interesting
little
tidbit.
That's a great point.
So learning how to think logically, how to solve problems, how to analyze different choices you may have in your life, that's all math. And so when you become skilled in math, you are learning a life skill. I will also say there are a lot of careers that young people may aspire to, and they don't realize that they need math. And there's a great example of that. There's a woman named Eileen Collins who is an astronaut, and she happened to be the very first female commander of one of our space shuttle missions. And I heard Eileen give a talk, and in her talk she said she was never any good in math in high school. She failed calculus. And then she went off to college, and she wanted to be a pilot. Lo and behold, she needed calculus to become a pilot. She hadn't realized that. And she had two choices. She could either buckle down and be determined and make her way through calculus, or she could give up her dream of becoming a pilot. She chose the former, and she just was determined to master calculus because now there was a reason, there was a motivation. Of course, she did master it. She went on to become a pilot and an astronaut.
An astronaut.
Space shuttle commander. Yeah. But
kids
may not realize that if you want to be a pilot, you need math. There are so
exactly.
many careers.
Of course you do.
And we don't want kids to shut doors to opportunity because they didn't like a class in high school. So we need to keep them motivated so that when they get to college and there is a career path in front of them, they don't have to close that door because it requires math and they've already decided that math is not for them. So we're just trying to convey that math is for everyone.
It is, and there's another career in mathematics. That's executive director and CEO of the MoMath Museum. What's your background, Cindy? Are you a mathematician?
So I am not a mathematician, interestingly, but I love math, and I took math
obviously.
In college all the way up through the 300 level, so I took a lot of advanced mathematics.
Wow.
And ultimately, I didn't see what the career path would be for me in mathematics, so I made a little bit of a left turn. And that's another thing that we're trying to do at MoMath and that we were trying to do with our panel last night. There are many people who love math and they don't know what they're going to do with it, so they turn in another direction. So my goal is to prevent that as well so that people who love math at least see the options in front of them. I did not. I had a different career path. But when I had my own children, my love of math sort of came rushing back. And we did a lot of play with math. We got involved in a lot of programs that were based on math. And I found myself becoming part of a community of families where the kids and the parents, everybody sort of was interested in math. And that was really the start of how I got involved because one of the other parents decided to open a museum of mathematics. And my hand was up in the air immediately saying, how can I help? So
Is
I started
MoMath?
As a volunteer.
Is this MoMath that that parent?
This is MoMath, absolutely.
Wow.
So in some way, it was the fact that I had a joy in math and brought my kids along with that and then became involved in a community of other people that liked math. So, yeah, I was a volunteer for probably too long. I had another job that I didn't want to leave. So it took a long time for me to decide that I should leave the job I had had for 18 years at that point, which I was very happy with. I wasn't looking for another job. But ultimately, this calling to help open a museum of math was too strong. And so I did jump ship, kind of took a dive off the deep end, hoped it would work out for the best.
It did.
And here I am.
How long has the museum been around?
We opened on 12-12-12. So we're now in our 12th year.
Let me guess, that would be December 12th, 2012, not 1912.
1912.
I'm not quite
that old.
I know. You were going 21. You were a protege, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, I'm a little older than 21.
Okay.
But
I'll
not
give you
quite
that.
In my hundreds. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And there you go. Another math. Well, there you go. Okay. Well, I want to ask you this before we go. What's the most popular program you guys have over there? The one that most teachers are tapping into or whatever?
I think one of our most popular programs is actually one that's in person. You may not be asking that, but let me start with that. An in-person program we have is called Family Fridays. And my rule for the people who come in and present in that program is you have to find something that an 8-year-old will take delight in, but the parents have to equally take delight in it. Not something where the parents are sitting there going, this is boring, but it's good for my kids, so I'm here. And not something where the kid is going, this is too hard, my mom or my dad is doing it all, and I'm just watching. But something that's equally engaging for people of all ages. So that's probably our most popular in-person program. And
cool.
Unsurprisingly, one of our most popular online programs is something we call the Math Gym. And this is basically an online Zoom problem/puzzle-solving session where we have someone present math problems and people work on them and they go in breakout rooms.
Wow.
And we have people go into the rooms and provide hints and tips and help, and people from all over the country are signing up for that.
Oh, that's cool.
So, and that sort of follows on the heels of something. We had a program that maybe was one of our most popular online programs called Mindbenders for the Quarantined. And as you might imagine from the name, this kicked off in spring of 2020 when everybody found themselves at home.
Yep.
A very wonderful mathematician by the name of Peter Winkler, who specializes in puzzles, decided he was going to, with MoMath, put out a puzzle every week. And the puzzle would come out on Sunday. On Tuesday, there would be a small hint. On Thursday, there would be a bigger hint. And on Saturday, the answer would be published.
Ta-da.
And then Sunday, another puzzle. And we got emails from all over the world from people who said this helped get them through the pandemic. This was something the whole family could focus on. It was pleasure. It was fun. It wasn't thinking about the dangers of the world and the pandemic and the sadness of what was happening around us. And it was probably a runaway hit series like we've never had before.
That's
and
pretty
he continued
cool.
it even after the pandemic ended for a
Why
while,
not?
But ultimately everyone went back to life as we know it. But that was another very popular program, Mindbenders for the Quarantined.
That is really cool. I want to ask you, is physically, I know it's in New York City, but where in New York City?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question. Had we met in January, I would have given you a different answer than I'm going to give
Ooh.
You right now. So for the first 11 years, we were on 26th Street between 5th and Madison, and last Friday we moved steps away and we're now right on 5th Avenue with what we're calling MoMath on 5th, and that is a temporary space for us. We are planning an expansion to a much bigger location, which we haven't released the location yet, because we discovered that people really do love math and they do love MoMath, and so our initial location we outgrew. So
Good.
We're on our way to a bigger location, and in between, you will find us on 5th Avenue as you walk from the Empire State Building to the Flatiron Building to iconic buildings in New York City. You will walk right past MoMath.
There you go. Well, I may pop over there and be there with a buddy of mine who, in fact, just that last beep on my computer was him. Okay, we're thinking of coming into New York City in June.
Let me know. We'd love to see you.
Believe me, I will. Okay, because he expressed an interest, and my wife and his wife want to go shopping, but I think he and I are going to come to the museum.
I will look forward to meeting you in person.
Thank you, Cindy. Okay, and I guarantee you, you'll be disappointed, because what I'm going to say, I just don't look like Brad Pitt anymore. Okay. I used to
well,
up until yesterday.
You used to look like Brad Pitt, yeah.
I did,
okay.
Up until yesterday. It's changing. Okay, what can I tell you? But at any rate, it's going to be great to meet you. I'm going to try to make that happen. Okay, Cindy, this was great. Thank you. I'm so glad we did this. I'm so glad we got it together.
I'm so glad, too. Thank you so much for talking to me and for sharing the joy of math and the joy of MoMath with
your
audience. I appreciate
it. Thank you for explaining the Einstein tile piece to me. You did it. But that was magnificent.
Yes.
That was historic.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Take care, then, Larry.
Okay, take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye, Cindy. Okay, Cindy Lawrence, she great or what? Executive Director, MoMath, MoMath.org. Go there. Visit there. Online or in person. Your kids will love it, and so will you. It'll open everybody's eyes. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening. I'm sorry for the boinks. I guess they're going to continue for a while.